you'll get advice and answers from the guy who leads the organic charge. Author, landscape architect, arborist, and your host, the Dirt Doctor, Howard Garrett.
Thank you, Logan Garrett, and welcome everybody. It's 866-444-3478 to be on the show. With me, jump on board here if you would like. This hour is brought to you by Farmers Market Soap, the best soap out there, especially for the price, good value, great quality, organic, and terrific. If you haven't tried it yet, you need to. And by Crazy Water, the best water that's available for you out there, mineral water from Mineral Wells, Texas. And Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics, wonderful products. We've been a fan now for quite a while, and other people more and more around us are getting on board using the Dr. O'Hara's. There's a lot of probiotic products out there, and probably some of them are pretty good, but from what I can determine, this is the very best. And if you haven't tried them yet, give it a shot. We're going to go to the phone. We've got Garlic Mike checking in with us first thing this hour. Hello, Mike.
Good morning. Heard a little garlic talk on the phone, on the radio, and I had to get in on that.
All right. Did you hear what I had a little bit of a question about?
I did, about the corm.
Yeah.
You can shell those and open them. The outer shell is kind of firm, maybe a pair of pliers or one of those old-style okay. pecan crackers.
Yeah, they are. They are hard. I doubt that there's very much food inside one of those, so it may not be worth the trouble.
It's about like a pearl onion. It's spherical, little round.
Okay. I've just never cracked one open before.
Yeah, and they have a fairly fibrous skin on them that needs to come off also.
Okay.
Well, quite a bit of work.
Quite a bit of work, and I think the better way to go is to just wait and plant them and have – I guess it's one of the things that can be done with the corms is if people have a greenhouse type of a situation, you could plant those corms in pots and have little have green foliage that you could eat and cook with during the winter. If you had under heat and enough light on top, I guess that'd be one thing you could do.
Never tried them in a greenhouse situation.
Yeah.
They tend to run by the seasons. You know, September, they'll start popping up out of the ground all over the place.
Yeah, it was interesting. That website that I found that I pulled up said that a common way that some people plant garlic is today on the winter solstice and then harvest at the summer solstice, which I've never heard before.
Yeah, I've read that. The times that I've planted this late, the bulb size is a little small, and I'm trying to build seed stock, so larger cloves, larger bulbs.
Well, we're still on the same page there. I'm telling people the ideal time is still October the 15th or so. But the point is, if you miss that time, you can be okay by planting now. And I saw, you know, the production I had that year that I planted in January – the bulbs were almost as big as the ones that I planted in the fall in October.
Yeah, sometimes they'll catch up with them. And I've never had any success transplanting. Once they're started, leave them alone.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And also on the flowers you were talking about, the stalks as the flowers just coming up are very tender, reminiscent of asparagus with a slight garlic taste. They'll get woody fast on you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And when they're hard, they're not much good to eat.
That's no, right. They're not. And then I really like the flowers. As they open up on the top, take a pair of scissors and just snip the ends off and put them on salads, across fettuccine alfredo, stuff like that.
Yeah, when they first open up, they'll be really nice and tender. There's just all kinds of uses for garlic. It's one of the neatest plants going. You ought to get into growing it. Have you ever given it a shot?
Well, something I've got on the list, you know, we haven't gotten that far down.
All right, Garlic Mike, checking in. Thanks, Mike.
You bet, buddy.
See you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, sir.
Let's go to an open line for you at 866-444-3478. Here's Vicki in Waco, Texas. Hi, Vicki.
Hey, Howard. I got a quick question for you about the bed preparation. You mentioned that you need to scrape that top level off.
Mm-hmm.
do you do that with a hoe? How do you go about getting that off? And then the other thing I wanted to ask you is the soil in Baco, you know, it's really very rocky. And would it be necessary to add that, those rock amendments to the soil?
Yeah, it, first of all, on the rock, Vicki, your rock that you have there is probably, for the most part, white limestone. It may vary from place to place there in Waco. But if even if you have rock, see, I have rock at my place, too, if, under in the front yard, for example. If you go down about 6 or 8 inches, you get into white caliche. And then below that is white limestone and then shale. So we have plenty of rock, too. But that rock is a completely different chemistry and makeup than the lava sand and the granites and the green sand and the things that they the rock materials that we recommend. So, yeah, you still need the rock material even though you have rocky soil.
Okay.
And the way you scrape the top off, there's a couple of different ways to go. The best way of all is to hire a landscape contractor to come in and do it for you with a sod cutter. You know, that's ideal. I don't recommend renting sod cutters, even though they've gotten a little bit lighter and a little bit easier to use the last few years. They're still real big and bulky and heavy and a lot of trouble for a homeowner, and it's just normally not the best way to go. The second way is to do it with some kind of a flat-bladed tool. You can use a hoe. You can use a flat-bladed shovel. I have a grubbing hoe that's just terrific, and I can. It's real sharp, and I can just, you know, lightly without working out too hard, you know, cut the top 2 inches away and not drill, not drive any of the rhizomes down in the ground.
But, okay, I think I've seen those.
Yeah, that's probably the easiest thing because they're heavy and you don't have to work quite as hard. You can let the tool do most of the work. Just be very careful about stabbing down and driving, you know, the rhizomes of the grass down into the ground.
Okay.
But all you need to do is 1.5 to 2 inches off the surface. Years ago when I was working with Lambert's, and of course Lambert's Landscape Company has been around for a long, long time and used to doing things. Certain people there especially used to doing things a certain way. And when I first introduced that idea, boy, there was some skepticism. And one fellow that was in charge of all the installation, Tommy McMasters, he was not a believer. And so we did some test areas out in front there when the place was there on LBJ. And it took that. It took doing the test plots and him actually seeing it to come around to saying, well, you know, that he's right. That does actually work if you do it properly.
Yeah, it makes sense to go that way.
Well, good luck. What are you going to be planting?
Well, I'm not sure. My plan is to remove a section where I've got that dang old either Dallas grass or Johnson grass that has those. I just got an area where that just drives me crazy.
It's probably Dallas grass. It grows about 12, 14 inches tall.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's Dallas grass.
And is that a good plan to try and remove that and put a bed there?
Yeah, if you take out 2 inches of the Dallas grass or common Bermuda grass, you know, two of the toughest ones to deal with, that gets rid of them. They will not come back from the roots, only from the crown, you know, from that base part, which is the stem part of the plant. Throw the Dallas grass and, well, any weeds and grass that you come up with, throw it in the compost pile, mix molasses in with it and water and compost it. That totally destroys its reproductive ability and turns it into something beneficial. You know, the green tissue, if there is any green tissue left, will have protein. The stems will still have protein value for the compost pile. And then you add your amendments. If you're doing it out in the lawn, this for anybody listening with Dallas grass or any tough weed, when you dig it out 2 inches deep, 1.5 to 2 inches deep, and you have a hole there, and you're leaving it turf, you just throw some compost back in that hole, and then the grass from the side fills in very quickly.
Okay. All right. Then I would do a landscape plant in my bed, but I was trying to put it in a place where I could get rid of those obnoxious weeds.
It is a tough one. It's really a high quality grass, but it's not any good for landscaping.
It's
good if you're raising cattle or something, but it's no good for the lawn.
Yeah.
Well, Vicki, good luck with your project.
Thank you so much, Howard.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All righty, Howard Garrett, the Dirt Doctor. It's 866-444-3478. One of the things that's kind of interesting to do as a landscape project is you have some area of your place that you're not using for anything. You can just kind of fence it off or physically leave it like it is and let whatever wants to grow, grow there. I'll tell you more about that when I come back. Howard Garrett, back after this.
Maestro Grow, the makers of great organic fertilizers and soil amendments like Texas Tea, Rose Glow, and the Sick Tree Treatment, is now making Garrett Juice Pro. Garrett Juice Pro is for use on all your crops to improve the soil and plant roots with humic acid, apple cider vinegar, molasses, seaweed, hydrolyzed fish, and beneficial bacteria and fungi. Ask for it in garden centers, feed stores, and hardware stores. And for more information, call 940-648-5400 or go to maestrogrow.com.
Organic Lawn Care, Growing Grass the Natural Way, is Howard's newest book. Howard explains in detail how to establish and maintain lawns, covering, planting, mowing, watering, fertilizing, and managing weeds and other pests. This book explains an easier, less expensive, and less water-intensive program than using conventional lawn care. Have the best-looking lawn in your neighborhood. Get more information or order this great book today by going to Howard Garrett Books on DirtDoctor.com.
You know that healthy living is my mission, and while looking for the best products to use, I've found a new organic bar soap called Farmer's Market. Farmer's Market soap is made from a unique blend of certified organic ingredients, avocado, blueberry, shea butters, and natural essential oils. Farmer's Market is organic, no nasty chemicals get in the way of the natural goodness of the ingredients, and you'll love the luxuriously rich lather to gently cleanse your skin, leaving you clean and refreshed. Farmer's Market comes in several farm-inspired natural fragrances like lavender, lemongrass, basil, and blackberry. Hard to pick my favorite, and they're all great. Take it from the Dirt Doctor, Farmer's Market is outstanding, and it's been certified to USDA organic standards. Ask for the Farmer's Market organic soaps in your local grocery, health food, or drug store, and go to fmorganics.com or dirtdoctor.com for more information. That's fmorganics.com.
To begin your natural organic program and get your lawn and garden off drugs, just follow Mother Nature's guide. First, stop hurting the life in the soil. Choose only products and techniques that are beneficial to the health of organisms above and in the soil. Stop using all synthetic fertilizers, toxic pesticides, and other toxic chemicals that harm living organisms. Avoid all high nitrogen synthetic fertilizers, especially nitrogen-only products. Toxic weed and feed products are the worst of all. Next, build soil health with aeration and natural organic fertilizers and amendments. And third, use native plants and well-adapted introductions. Finally, water only as needed. The organic program will reduce the watering requirements by about 50%. MoTurf is needed and mulch clippings into the lawn to return nutrients and organic matter to the soil. The natural way is fun, will save you money, and always works better in every way. After all, Mother Nature knows best. For more information about natural organic gardening, visit dirtdoctor.com.
I have for years advised homeowners about pet health, landscaping, gardening, and pest control. In the pet category, I now have a strong dog and cat recommendation. There are many good pet foods on the market, and we've promoted some of the very best, but Victor is the dog food I recommend and feed my dogs now, and I think you should try it with your pets as well. They'll enjoy it just like mine do. The formulas that I focus on are the grain-free ones, but none of the Victor products contain wheat, corn, soy, or gluten. They're all naturally preserved with no toxins, fake flavors, or colors, and they're loaded with vitamins, minerals, and enzymes, also probiotics, prebiotics, and other healthy ingredients. My dog Carmen and Tater look and feel better than ever. Ask for Victor in your favorite pet or feed store. For more information, go to victordogfood.com or email me by clicking on Ask Howard button on dirtdoctor.com. That's victordogfood.com.
It is not uncommon for the air inside a home or office to be more toxic than the air outside. This is because of the presence of toxic materials that outgas and the fact that homes and buildings are better sealed and insulated than ever before. Keeping windows open as often as possible allows fresh air in and keeps toxins flowing out. This is especially important when cleaning your home. Skip the store-bought air fresheners and instead try boiling cinnamon, cloves, or any other pleasant herbs. Also, plants may not make your house smell different, but are good for filtering contaminated interior air. Natural organic cleaning products are now on the market and are competing for that spot under your sink. They are non-toxic and they do not put off toxic gases. Visit HowardGarrett.com for more information on how to live a healthier lifestyle and to find great products for your home that work well and don't contaminate the air.
Covering the bare soil around plants is crucial, and there are several mulch choices. The best mulch for any site is shredded recycled plant material such as limbs, leaves, twigs, dead plants, bark, spent flowers, and other plant debris that grew on the property. That's the natural way. How it is done in the forest and on the prairie. Second best would be purchased shredded native tree trimmings. Third in line is shredded hardwood bark. Pine bark and cypress are not good choices. Pine bark is just bad in general. It won't stay in place and contains chemicals that hurt plant growth. Cypress doesn't break down well. Mulch should decompose to create the true natural food to feed microbes and plant roots. Pine needles are good, but look out of place if there are no pine trees on the property. Lava gravel makes good mulch and has the extra benefit of keeping squirrels and cats out, but lava gravel has its negative points. It looks harsher than organic mulches, and it doesn't break down into humus. The best commercial mulch is a mixture of compost and shredded tree trimmings. For more information on mulch, go to DirtDoctor.com.
All right. Howard, back with you. And real quickly before we go to back to the phones, that idea that was actually another thing passed on to me by one of the listeners originally before I had actually tried it myself, was to take an area of your property and just stop maintaining it, let it grow. You can put a little fence in or some kind of a barrier there or something to mark the boundary of it, but you don't have to. Just stop mowing it, stop weeding it, stop doing anything to it. Let whatever wants to grow there grow. And native trees and various things start growing and getting taller and shading it, the problem things will need full sun for the most part, and they'll start getting shaded out. If you have something get started that you don't want, like a fruitless mulberry or some junky kind of thing, you can do some very careful select pruning. But for the most part, just let grow what wants to grow. And it's a fascinating thing to see what will happen first and in a way it will develop over a period of time, and to have a naturalistic naturalistic part of your garden, even if you don't do it all over the place, can be very, very effective. Jack in Brookings, Oregon, listening on KGOE. Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Pretty good, Howard. I want to give you a little background here. I was probably growing garlic before Garlic Mike was even born.
Well, I know who you are now. You send me stuff, photographs quite a bit, Jack. Are you Jack? Okay. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. You need to categorize garlic a little more. You know, you refer to it just generally, but there's about three or four distinct different garlic variety or types.
Sure.
You have your soft stem garlic. Now that doesn't send up any flower. All it has is the sword shaped leaves. You don't plant it the same as you do your garlics with the stem that comes up in flowers. The soft stem.
Do you plant it differently, Jack?
Well, the soft stem only needs to go under the ground about an inch or two, where your hard stem, and that's what you've been talking about, the hard stem, that's the one that sends up the flower. You plant it approximately 4 to 6 inches deep.
We usually don't plant it quite that deeply, and I've done the soft stem here, too, and I guess I've just been lucky. I've gotten away with doing them all just about the same. But it's interesting that you see a difference.
Yes, and, you know, you've got many different varieties of both your soft stem, your hard stem, and then I think a lot of what you're growing is elephant garlic, which is basically a leek.
That's exactly right. The ones that have the big flowers that I show off a lot, that's what garlic Mike and I have talked about it being. I kind of do put it all in the same category, and I guess maybe I've just been lucky. I've had good luck with managing all of those different ones, and I've grown some of the fancy, colorful ones and various kinds of garlic, and all basically the same techniques. So,
yeah, see the depth of the garlic. Whenever you have that stem with the flower top, that it needs to be a little well more rooted, and that's why you plant it slightly deeper, where the soft stem, it doesn't have to hold up any weight.
You have a problem with them falling over, is that?
Well, if you plant them just an inch or two deep, you would.
Yeah.
Maybe.
For whatever reason, maybe the kind of soil we have, we don't run into that too often.
Depends how strong your winds are also.
My favorite one that I've ever planted, and I don't remember where I got it, but I called it a serpent-headed garlic. It had the flower stem that came up and twirled around and danced.
Around,
it was fantastic, and it was a great-tasting garlic as well.
Those are mainly grown in Europe and Asia, those varieties with the serpentine. And the spathe on them, the stem is not as edible as the elephant garlic.
Oh, it's real hard from the beginning.
It's harder, right from the beginning almost.
That's
And it's the elephant garlic and the leek varieties that usually have those little golden colored corms.
Mm-hmm.
Your regular hard stem garlic doesn't necessarily have any of that, and your soft stem garlic definitely doesn't have any of those.
The little corms.
The little corms, right. And, you know, I've been growing garlic since before they started calling it elephant garlic. They used to call it giant French garlic in the gardening books. That was probably before 1970. There's a company out here in Oregon, Albany, Oregon, Nichols Garden Nursery, that has claimed that they named it elephant garlic.
Oh, right. Well, maybe they did.
You know, elephant garlic is very mild. It's different because it's a leek. And I don't know. You know, when you talk just general garlic, people are going to plant their cloves and they're going to wonder, why didn't I get a stem, you know, if you're planting soft stem?
Well, that's why we try to talk about the differences in the stems, the flowers, and how they're going to look. We try to talk about that. Maybe I don't do it as often as I should, but I appreciate your points.
And I wanted to let you know about that alfalfa. It's been grown genetically modified out west here for the last 1 or 2 years, definitely the past year.
Well, I knew they were talking about it, and I didn't know if it was on the books yet or not.
Oh,
it's not good.
China is they buy a lot of our hay. So they are turning it back because of the genetic modified alfalfa in it.
I don't blame them at all. Jack, thank you for checking in.
I hear the birds. All right.
Okay.
Happy trails.
Yeah, keep sending me information. I appreciate it.
I will.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Howard Garrett, the Dirt Doctor, and I'll be back with you right after this. It's 866-444-3478.
The Texas Organic Research Center is a nonprofit research institute focused on natural organic programs in gardening, landscape management, and agribusiness. TORC's mission is to show that organics work better than chemical approaches, saves money, and helps us enjoy healthier lives. The Texas Organic Research Center needs your support. Go to dirtdoctor.com and click on the Texas Organic Research Center logo on the homepage to contribute. Your contribution is tax deductible. Please donate to make our world better today. Learn to live more natural and organic and be healthier by learning from and purchasing one of Howard Garrett's best-selling books. His natural organic programs and pest solutions work better in every way and can save you money. You can learn about growing beautiful landscaping, delicious healthy food crops, pet management, and healthy living. Howard's books are useful coast to coast and border to border. You can learn about the books on dirtdoctor.com and find them in your favorite bookstore.
Roses are our best medicinal and culinary herbs. They should be grown organically because when roses are loaded with toxic pesticides and other chemicals, the natural benefits of roses are squandered. Rosehip tea or using rose petals in teas or salads is a good idea if the plants haven't been sprayed with synthetic poisons. For the best results with roses, plant well-adapted roses for your area. Roses on their own roots are often the best choices. Planting, watering, and feeding instructions for roses can be found on the homepage of DirtDoctor.com. Click on Organic Guides and look for the Organic Rose Program. For disease control in general, spray roses with Garrot Juice Plus and BioWash or garlic pepper tea. For insect pests, spray essential oil products, Garrot Juice Plus and BioWash. Dust if necessary with natural diatomaceous earth. For thrips, apply beneficial nematodes to the soil in early spring or when foliage begins to grow. To learn more about growing roses the natural way, go to DirtDoctor.com.
You know it's important to maintain healthy cholesterol levels. But did you know that keeping your blood pressure in a healthy range is just as important for good heart health? Without healthy circulation, oxygen and vital nutrients can't be delivered to your body. And elevated blood pressure can put stress on your veins and arteries, leading to serious heart conditions. But here's the good news. There are things you can do right now to encourage healthy blood pressure. One of the easiest is to take Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. A recent published clinical study suggests that taking Kyolic supports healthy blood pressure and can mean better circulation throughout your body. And now, Kyolic has created Formula 109, a unique supplement with other natural ingredients to help relax and support healthy blood pressure. Taking Kyolic Formula 109 every day as part of a heart-smart lifestyle is the easy, all-natural way to keep you in circulation. Available everywhere fine nutritional supplements are sold. Visit Kyolic.com or call 1-800-421-2998 for a free sample today. 1-800-421-2998. Have you had your Kyolic today?
Without good health, little else matters. Good health affects weight, skin quality, teeth, hearing, eyesight, and enjoyment of life. It also affects your energy, controls your allergy sensitivities, and helps prevent the degenerative diseases like diabetes, arthritis, heart disease, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, MS, and cancer. Here are a few ideas on living a more healthy life. Drink water from glass or stainless steel rather than from plastic bottles. Plastic, especially the soft plastic bottles, outgasses contaminants that accumulate in the body and negatively affect your health. Eat food that is grown or raised naturally and prepared with little or no processing or toxic chemicals. Exercise regularly. Walk or do more vigorous exercise on a regular basis. Work out with a partner or join a yoga, fitness, or martial arts class. Visit HowardGarrett.com today for more information and products to help you live a healthier lifestyle.
All right, Howard, back, and let's go to Beaverton, Oregon, and talk to Larry. Hello, Larry.
Well, good morning, Howard.
What's going on?
Well, I want to talk to you today about the arborvitae bushes that are in our backyard. We live in a neighborhood of about 7,000 square foot lots, and we have arborvitae that surround the backyard right on the property line.
Okay.
But we didn't plant these. We moved into this house about 2.5 years ago. But I noticed in the wintertime that the foliage on the arborvitae high up gets pretty thin. And I suspect it's squirrels that are eating the getting up in there and eating the foliage. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I've never seen that happen. Larry, there's two different kind of arborvitaes. There's the eastern, which tends to be a little darker green and stay thicker, and then the western arborvitae tends to get kind of discolored, not such a green look in the wintertime, and they get taller. They're a little bigger plants. Is it the discoloration or the thinning that you see mostly in the wintertime?
Yes, well, it starts maybe in September, October, and right now they're really thin at the top, but it's just in splotches. So,
okay.
And it does, some of the foliage does turn yellow, but in other places there is no foliage. It just sticks there.
Okay. Do your other plants in the area look okay? Is it just going on with the arborvitae?
Well, that's about the only thing we have in the backyard. My wife has a small garden, and that seems to do just fine.
Okay, good. Well, if you send me some pictures to info@dirtdoctor.com, I might be able to see a little bit more. I'd be a little surprised if it was squirrels. It could be. And like I was telling one of my buddies here a couple of days ago here in Dallas, they were commenting that I should know how to control squirrels. And I said, if I knew how to control squirrels, I could retire because it's the biggest problem that we have. You know, it's just a very difficult thing to do. One thing I wrote about arborvitae in the very first book that I ever wrote of Plants of the Metroplex was that every insect known to man either eats on or lives in this plant. That's not really true, but it seemed to be the case where when I grew up as a kid, we had a big one right by the side door where we went in and out, and it tended to have a wasp nest in it from time to time, so that's why I disliked it so much. One thing I suggest that you do, Larry, is look at the base of the plant and see if you do have nice, strong flares showing. An arborvitae, even though it, you know, a lot of people would classify it as a bush instead of a tree, but it needs to have a flare exposed at the base just like any shade tree does. And if it doesn't, it could be in stress, and that could be part of what's causing some discoloration and some defoliation. Do you have bare stems, bare trunks, or are they bushy all the way to the ground?
Well, some of them are bushy all the way to the ground, and in areas there are the trunks, you can see them real easily.
Okay. Well, take a look at it. If you're not familiar with what I'm talking about, look at our website, dirtdoctor.com, under trunk flares or root flares, and see what, you know, I'm talking about. You should be able to step on the flare. It should be turning out and going sideways, you know, rather than the trunk just coming out of the ground like a telephone pole. And if they are not exposed properly, exposing them, you'll see a dramatic improvement in your plants.
Okay. The other thing is we have plans to prune these. They're about 20 feet tall, and they really hide the neighbors. Mm-hmm. But they're getting pretty scruffy. So we're planning on pruning them to down to about 15 feet. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, they'd prefer not to have that done to them, but if you're losing the top anyway, if it's the top is kind of weak, it might be good to prune them back. Do it carefully. Don't just flat top them, but do pick pruning, which means take off the longest limbs back to where they connect with another, so that the net result is shorter plants that still have a nice soft appearance.
Okay.
All right. And send me a picture if you can, and I'll see if I see anything else. I'd be glad to give you a hand. But if the flares are not dramatically exposed, do that, and you'll see the trees really improve.
Well, thank you very much. I will send you pictures.
Okay. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you. Bye.
And anybody can do that, by the way. If you have a question and have a photograph of something that would help, you can send it to info@dirtdoctor.com, and I'll be able to more correctly give you as good advice as I can. We had a full board of calls, and everybody went away. Matt, did you run everybody off? So even though we're near the end of the show here, if you want to jump on here real quick, you can. 866-444-3478. Two more things that I was going to cover that are under guides on the homepage of dirtdoctor.com. One is mulching. Mulching we talk about quite a bit, but it's important. And I want to, for those that maybe new listeners or whatever, I wanted to cover it one more time, and there's a couple of little caveats also. What I recommend for mulching plants is to cover the bare soil with shredded native tree trimmings. You can buy shredded mulch in bags at nurseries and garden centers. You can buy it from the sand and gravel people, the compost companies, often do it. They will have a shredded tree trimmings that's double ground, that's a finer texture to use around smaller plants. It is the best mulch. If you grind up your own material that grew on your own property and shred it and put it back as mulch, that is a number one. That's the best mulch you can have. Recycle it right back down to the ground just like nature does in the forest and the prairie. If you have to buy some, buy shredded native cedar or shredded native tree trimmings, best way to go. The ones that are kind of so-so are cypress and, there aren't that many so-so. Cypress I really don't like because it doesn't break down fast enough. Pine bark is not good at all because it doesn't encourage growth very well because of the natural chemicals in the pine bark. And it blows and washes away. It doesn't stay in place very well. The worst ones are the colored dyed mulches. Those are wood. They're not ground up tree trimmings. They're lumber that's ground up and then dyed red or black. They're horrible. They're terrible. They shouldn't be used. They shouldn't be on the market. High carbon, toxic chemicals in the dye, just a problem across the board. So don't use those. Even worse than that is rubber, ground up rubber. There's toxic materials there, but it doesn't break down. It doesn't create any biological activity like we want to have, and that's what we get from the shredded native tree trimmings. And then, I've got a little bit more on water I want to talk about if I can work it in, but I need to help Roberto in Plano first. Hello, Roberto.
Hey, good morning, Howard. How are you?
Doing well.
It's been a while. I haven't called. I still listen. I just have a newborn, and so.
I understand that.
With that in mind, my vegetable garden, I didn't plant anything new for the fall. And once everything kind of froze over, you know, like the tomatoes and the peppers and the stevia and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I've got clear space. And what I'd like to do is start to plant some other vegetables that I could use for to make some baby purees. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could kind of, you know, give me some suggestions of what's easy to grow and what, you know, stuff that I can keep in a schedule so I can keep it going all year long.
For babies, some of the things you can grow probably babies aren't going to like that much. Radishes and some of the greens and those kinds of things. You can plant a whole bunch of cool season vegetables right now. Carrots would probably be the best thing to do.
What kind of carrots?
The best thing to do is to do more than one. You know, as the weather changes, and of course the soil has something to do with it too, it's best to have more than one variety. And the carrots, like the Danvers and the ones that are a little bit, they're thicker kind of uniformly all down the carrot, those are good around here, but plant several different kinds so you give yourself the best chances. And you can harvest the carrots when they're very small. You don't have to wait until they get, really big and fully mature. That'd be one thing you could do. Beets, maybe would work out okay for kids. But
now remember, I'm going to puree them. So, I'm just kind of looking for easy to grow at this point, I guess.
Well, the easy to grow are all the different kinds of radishes. Beets mm-hmm. are pretty easy to grow as well. The carrots, especially in, when you hit these warmer spells, you can get them going, and then you may have to cover them up with floating row cover during the real bad drops in temperature, the cold spells. But you can plant a succession of them all along.
And, oh, okay.
Any of the other cool season vegetables, broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, kale, all those things can be planted now if you miss the ideal time to plant them earlier.
And buy seed?
You can buy seed or transplants, either one. Planting the transplants is going to give you a better shot at getting some production at this point, though.
Mm-hmm. And then when's the next cycle?
Well, we're planting all the time. We're planting as we have this roller coaster weather. we just continue to have windows to get things started, these cool season plants. And if you get them going and they can mature when it's still cool in the early, late winter and early spring before it gets hot, you just have fantastic quality crops that way. So go ahead. The key is to have the floating row cover around and be able to cover them up, you know, if we have the harsh weather come in and really drop down after being warm. But other than that, you've got a window every time we have one of these warm spells.
Mm-hmm. It's harsh meaning below freezing?
No, they can. Most of these cool season things can take some frost. They can take high 20s and low 30s, but when you get down into the 20s and teens, that's when you have to cover them up. I'm going to need to run, Roberto, but I think that'll get you on the right track.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Howard Garrett, the Dirt Doctor, back right after this.
Crazy water is so good, it's crazy. Here's the crazy water tip of the day. Electrolytes like sodium, potassium, magnesium, and chloride recharge your cells. That's especially important for your heart and muscles. Low electrolytes can lead to fatigue and cramping. Crazy water contains over 11 minerals that help with hydration recovery, replenishing your electrolytes, and more. And crazy water does it all naturally. Get some at Whole Foods, Central Market, and other crazy good stores. Go to drinkcrazywater.com to find a store in your area.
BioSI is a leading manufacturer of microbial products that help build healthy soil to grow healthy gardens and food crops. BioSI products loosen the soil, improve fertilizer and water efficiency, and help reduce diseases in crops. For growers, BioSI's stubble digester helps reduce crop residue and prepares your field for next season's growth. Order BioSI's lawn and garden products today by contacting BioSI at 866-393-4786 or at BioSITechnology.com. That's BioSITechnology.com.
Staying healthy and building immunity begins in your gut, where an amazing 70% of your immune cells reside. So keeping your digestive tract healthy is imperative for ideal health. I'm Dr. Fred Pescatore, author and science advisor for Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics. And there's no better way to improve your digestive health than taking a high-quality probiotic. I recommend taking Dr. O'Hara's every day to rev up the immune system because it has carefully selected strains of beneficial bacteria that work synergistically to maximize health and improve immunity. His exclusive formula delivers live, beneficial bacteria that are easily absorbed and provides optimal digestive support, boosts immunity, and increases energy through better absorption of nutrients. Backed by over 25 years of scientific research, I believe that Dr. O'Hara's probiotic is the most powerful and effective probiotic available. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference.
Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
Here are some myths and truths about healthy eating. Myth: vitamin B12 can be obtained from certain plant sources such as blue-green algae and soy products. Truth: vitamin B12 is not absorbed from plant sources. Modern soy products increase the body's need for B12. Myth: animal fats cause cancer and heart disease. Truth: animal fats contain many nutrients that protect against cancer and heart disease. Elevated rates of cancer and heart disease are associated with consumption of large amounts of processed vegetable oils. Myth: children benefit from a low-fat diet. Truth: children on low-fat diets suffer from growth problems, failure to thrive, and learning disabilities. Visit howardgarrett.com for more information on living a healthier lifestyle and for finding great natural organic products.
I'm always working to find new and better organic products. One of the companies that helps me in that regard is the Medina Corporation in Hondo, Texas. They've been helping farmers, ranchers, landscapers, and homeowners with quality soil building longer than anybody in the business. Medina produces fertilizers and soil amendments, both in liquid and dry formulations, that work by stimulating the soil biology to help all crops. Whether growing landscape plants, herbs, vegetables, grasses, or trees, Medina has the products to help you budget wisely, effectively increase production, and treat the environment right. There's a new prilled organic fertilizer called Growing Green Premium Lawn Food that I recommend you try. The commercial version of Garrett Juice Plus is also made by Medina, and it's available in all sizes, quarts, gallons, barrels, and even large totes. Remember to ask for Medina. The website's medinaag.com. You'll find the Medina label at all hardware, nursery, and feed stores that sell organic products.
Compost is nature's own living fertilizer and can be made at home or purchased ready to use. It can be started any time of the year in sun or shade, and anything once living, plant or animal, can and should go into the compost. The ingredients in your compost should be a mix of coarse and fine textured material to promote air circulation through the pile. Turn the pile as time allows to speed up the process. However, turning is not critical. Moisture is important. A compost pile should be roughly as wet as a squeezed out sponge to help the living organisms thrive and work their magic. Compost is ready to use as a soil amendment when the ingredients are no longer identifiable. The color is a dark brown, the texture is soft and crumbly, and the smell is pleasant like the forest floor. Rough, unfinished compost can be used as top dressing mulch around all plantings. Finished compost is used in potting soil and bed preparation. You can learn more about composting and natural organic gardening at dirtdoctor.com. Trees become infested with insect pests and diseases when they are in stress and sick. That's when Mother Nature sends in the cleanup crews. Insects and disease pathogens are simply just doing their jobs, trying to take out unfit plants. More plant sickness is environmental. Too much water, maybe not enough water, too much fertilizer, or maybe the wrong kind of fertilizer. Other culprits include toxic chemical pesticides, compaction of soil, and grade changes. There could also be ill-adapted plant varieties, overplanting single plant species and creating monocultures, as was done with American elms in the Northeast. The Dirt Doctor's tree health plan is simple. Keep trees in stress-free condition so their immune systems can resist insect pests and diseases. The sick tree treatment is basically stop using high nitrogen fertilizers and toxic pesticides. Remove excess soil from the root flares, aerate the root zone heavily, apply organic amendments, and spray trees and soil with Garrett juice. To learn more on maintaining healthy trees, go to dirtdoctor.com.
All right, one more question on garlic with Robert in Wilton, Oklahoma. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how are you, sir?
Doing well.
Hey, is it too late to transplant garlic? I think it's garlic. I gathered just about, dug it up alongside the road probably 15 years ago. We've never used any of it, but it's coming up beautiful again. Some say it's garlic. Some say it's wild onions. Winter onions.
Well, they're kind of closely kin. But like we were talking with Garlic Mike earlier in the show, garlic doesn't transplant very well. But if you've got some cloves or the corms, planting them now from those would work fine. Transplanting would be a little bit iffy at this point. Be a little bit iffy anytime, actually. If the
I'm sorry.
Where they're growing, can you just leave them there and harvest them from there when they're mature?
Oh, yes. Okay. I believe I could harvest them now. They're big green, you know. We've ate them one other time, but I've got a lot of them now scattered out all over the different property.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to transfer them, kind of control them now.
Well, the way you do that is wait till they are mature in the early summer. And then you can save them and plant them in the fall in the place where you want them to go. That'll work better than transplanting them. You can try that, but you may not have very good luck moving them. They don't transplant real well. And the only thing for you and for everybody listening, if you do think that it might be wild onions are edible. They're fine. But you have to be careful about that because there's also a plant called crow poison that looks almost identical, and it is poisonous. So kind of look online at my website or just do a search and make sure if it smells like onions and tastes like onions and is good, it is, because crow poison doesn't have fragrance and doesn't taste good. In fact, just the opposite.
Well, these have three cloves on the bottom of them, Howard, whenever you dig them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's probably wild onions. It'd be my guess. How tall do they get?
Oh my goodness, they 3 or 4 feet.
Okay, you know. Well, that doesn't sound like wild onions. That sounds like some kind of a garlic or a leek or something.
And they'll have a bulb on top of them, a bloom or something.
Uh-huh,
you know,
right? Do you have a way to take a digital picture and send me a picture?
I don't, sir.
Well, if you find somebody that does, some young whippersnapper around there, send me a picture of it, and we'll try to identify them. And if they're as good as you're making them sound, I might want to talk you out of a start next summer so I can get some growing here in Dallas.
You can have all you want.
Okay.
One other quick question.
Sure.
Crape myrtle, do you need a root flare on them too?
Yes, any woody plant needs a flare, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I certainly appreciate your help, sir, and you help lots of people, and I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for calling.
Thank you, and have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. Talk to you again.
Bye now.
Yeah, it's I don't know why it's a little bit of a surprise to some people that crape myrtle maybe doesn't need a flare, and unfortunately for the thousands and thousands of them that are planted here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and other places across the south and up north of here to a degree too, most of them are planted far too deeply in the ground. Crape myrtles have a big, very beautiful flare, in some cases spreading out to an apron. And when that is exposed, one, there's beauty there. It really looks nice. It's a very attractive look. And when it is exposed properly, you don't have aphids, you don't have scale, you don't have sooty mold, you don't have mildew, you don't have the problems at least nearly as much. You don't have near as much pressure, and a lot of times it goes away completely because exposing that flare relieves the stress that brings on those insect problems and diseases. So, yes, crape myrtles definitely need a flare. The one final thing I was going to talk about in the guides that I'm going to update is irrigation. And this is important because it's kind of gotten out of hand in a lot of cities. A lot of the cities now are recommending drip irrigation, and they're recommending it as a way to save money on water. And I guess there are some situations where it's in a perfect flat bed and perfect environment and everything that it, compared to sprinkling above ground spray heads, it would save a little money. But what's wrong with that whole scenario is that some cities, quite a few around here in North Texas, are demanding that it be put in on commercial properties, and I think maybe even some residential situations and parkways near the street and things like that. It is a very poor way to irrigate certain plants, certain crops, and in certain conditions, it just doesn't work at all. There's a pretty famous now project near our house. It's a big fancy grocery store, and they planted thousands and thousands of ground cover plants on a slope at near the walkway at the street. Every single one of the plants is dead. So there's not any money cost savings if you put in an irrigation system that keeps things either too wet or too dry, which is what drip does in a lot of cases, especially on slopes. It's horrible. It's not a solution that'll work. And it's also not a solution that'll work for ground cover beds. You need spray. You need to see where the water's going. Drip just does not work. So those of you that ever have any opportunity to try to get cities to change their demands on using it across the board, read more of what I have to say in newsletters and things on my website on dirtdoctor.com and see if you agree. Well, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays to everybody out there. Enjoy whatever you're doing. Try to work in a little gardening and enjoy that part of nature and your time during the winter as well. And I'll see you next time.